भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो चैप्टर 12 बर्थ ऑफ एम्परर परीक्षित द सेज शौनक सेड द उम ऑफ उत्तरा मदर ऑफ महाराज परीक्षित वॉज स्पॉइल्ड बाय द ड्रेडफुल An invincible Brahmastra weapon released by Ashwatthama. But Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Lord. How was the great Emperor Parikshit, who was a highly intelligent and great devotee, born in that womb? How did his death take place? And what did he achieve after his death? We all respectfully want to hear about him, Maharaj Parikshit, to whom Sukadev Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please speak on this matter. So, Shaunaka Rishi, headed by the sages, the sages, on behalf of the sages, Shaunaka Rishi is asking these questions to Srila Suta Goswami. What were his questions? How was Parikshit Maharaj born in the womb of Uttara? Although Brahmastra was released by Ashwatthama to kill him when he was in the womb of his mother. And how was he saved by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. How was the great Emperor Parikshit, who was a highly intelligent and great devotee, born in the womb? How was he born? In spite of being attacked by Brahmastra, and how did his death also take place? And what did he achieve after his death? So these were the questions that Shaunaka Rishi asked to Srila Suta Goswami, and he also wanted to know how Srila Sukadev Goswami spoke to him about transcendental knowledge. How Sukadev Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge unto him. So from these scriptures, we get to see one thing, that it is in response to the sincere inquiry that the exalted personalities imparted the knowledge. Sukadeva Goswami, that is the difference here that we see. Here we give the Bhagavatam class, we read from the Bhagavatam class. We just read out and then we wait for the question at the end. But actually the basis is the question. But the point is, in order to ask this transcendental question, one has to be properly educated. One has to be well acquainted with the subject, and one must be intelligent to ask the questions. So as the readers of Bhagavatam, what should we do? We should try to develop genuine interest, out of which we'll be able to ask questions. If we don't have this sincere inquiry, we won't be able to make spiritual advancement. And that sincere inquiry will come from developing interest on this topic. We should not attend the Bhagavatam class because we just otherwise the temple president will get on our case. Or the devotees will say, okay, if you don't attend Bhagavatam class, there won't be any prasad. Bhagavatam class in this way will not be a compulsion. Bhagavatam class should be a genuine interest to attend. Reading and hearing about Krishna consciousness is the most important aspect of spiritual advancement. In spiritual life, we should not do things out of compulsion. At the stage of Vaidhi Bhakti, it is necessary at the initial stage, but we should actually generate, we should try to develop genuine interest out of which we should be inspired automatically to come to listen to Krishna Katha. Otherwise, we won't get the taste. And if we don't get the taste, then what will happen? If we don't like something, then what will happen? We won't continue it. After a while, we'll go away. We should remember that we haven't come to Krishna consciousness to go away one day. We have come to Krishna consciousness, we have joined ISKCON to be here life after life. Not only in this life, but life after life, we should desire to be on this path and do whatever is necessary for that. Spiritual life should not become a drudgery. Spiritual life shouldn't become a boring affair. Out of compulsion, otherwise what will people think if I don't come to the Bhagavatam class? What will the temple authorities say? If I don't come to the Bhagavatam class, or if I don't attend the attend the morning program, then the temple authorities will tell me to leave. So that the temple authorities do not ask me to leave, let me just attend it. Although I don't like to do that. I don't like to get up in the morning. I don't like to come to the Mangalarati. I don't like to attend the morning program. I don't like to chant the holy name. I don't like to attend the Bhagavatam class. If that is our mood, will we be able to continue? Will we be able to continue? No. Someday when other opportunities come, we will leave. So Bhagavatam or Krishna consciousness, our involvement in Krishna consciousness should be genuine. It should be genuine. We should appreciate what we are doing. Now if I ask you, are you appreciating what you are doing here in the temple? Think about it. I can't hear from all of you, but maybe someday one by one I would ask you this question. And that's what I always ask you. Are you really enjoying what you are doing? Think about it. Seriously think about it. Are you really appreciating what you are doing? Or would you like to do something else? Would you like to do something? If I give a choice, what would you like to do? A genuine offer. Whatever you want to do, you'll be allowed to do that. Think what you'll do at that time. What will be your response? So let this involvement be genuine. And remember that you are not this in ISKCON, you are not in this movement for anyone else but for your own sake. That should be the reason of your being in the movement. It is for your own benefit that you want to be in this movement. And of course, for another person you are here. That is Krishna. It's just between you and Krishna that you are in this movement. Prabhupada made the arrangement, a beautiful arrangement, so that you can develop your relationship with Krishna. Krishna is waiting for you, and now Srila Prabhupada made the arrangement for you to go to Krishna. Now the question is whether you want to go to Krishna or whether you want to stay in Maya. And that should be the real question, ultimately. You want to be in Krishna, you want to go to Krishna, or you want to enjoy here in this material nature? That's why I often remind you that we should actually be prepared to leave this planet, we should be prepared to leave and go anytime. We should be prepared at every moment. If death comes now, how am I going to face it? What will be my response? If death comes now, am I ready to go? Again, you don't have to tell me. You have to ask yourself. If death comes now, these are the questions we have to constantly ask ourselves. If death comes now, am I ready? Or I have other agenda to fulfill? No. Our ultimate point is, our ultimate goal is to be ready all the time. Parikshit Maharaj got 7 days time. But we do not know how much time do we have. Any day, any moment, we may have to say, okay, now go. Now, are you going to hold on to this body? Are you going to hold on to things in related to the body? Or we are ready to go. I'm a spirit soul, and now I'm free to go back to Krishna. So here, the sages assembled in the Naimisharanya, and Suta Goswami is answering to their questions. They are asking some very important questions. Here the question is, please tell us about Parikshit Maharaj. So they heard about Parikshit Maharaj, but they didn't have the full information. Parikshit Maharaj, when he was in the womb of his mother, he was attacked by Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama wanted to kill him. And in order to kill him, he used the most deadly weapon, Brahmastra. We don't even know what Brahmastra actually is. Just to give an idea what Brahmastra is like, there are 5 elements, right? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And beyond that is, beyond this material elements is, beyond even Akash, beyond ether, is Mahatattva. And beyond Mahatattva is Brahma, the spiritual energy, from which the material nature has become manifest. Now this Brahmastra is made with that element. What, say, if we consider what is Agnyastra? What is a nuclear weapon? Nuclear weapon is actually a kind of a fiery weapon, Agnyastra. There are Agnyastra, Bayavastra, water weapon, like Varunavan. Agnivan was released, the fire weapon was released, and with water weapon it was counteracted. So in this way, there were different elements were used for different types of weapons. Nowadays, the weapons are simply fire weapons. They don't know how to counteract the fire weapon. But those days, they used to counteract the fire weapons with water weapons. They're trying to make things like that anti-missiles. The missile, if a missile is released, missile is like a rocket. It's a rocket, actually. So the rocket is released, and the rocket carries the warhead, nuclear warhead. Nuclear bomb is carried by the rocket. Now they have developed a device that when the rocket is going, another rocket will go and neutralize it. It will clash. They have that kind of weapon. But they do not have the kind of weapon that a fire weapon would be neutralized by water weapon. And things like that. There is Agnyastra, fire weapon, Varunastra, water weapon, Vayavastra, air weapon. So in this way, there are various types of weapon. There are sound weapon, Shabda Vedivan. There is a, like Dasharath actually used that, arrow or a missile that would hit the target by following the sound. And this is how advanced the people in the past in India used to be. And it was not just India. India was the entire Earth planet. So now Suta Goswami is replying to the questions of Shaunaka Rishi. Emperor Yudhishthir administered generously to everyone during his reign. He was exactly like the father. He had no personal ambition and was freed from all sorts of sense gratification because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. News even reached the celestial planets about Maharaj Yudhishthir's worldly possessions, the sacrifices by which he would attain a better destination, his queen, his stalwart brothers, his extensive land, his sovereignty over the planet Earth, and his fame, etc. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ki, Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki, Jai Shri Shri Gaunitai Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki. So, Yudhishthir Maharaj, after the battle of Kurukshetra, became the king, and he was ruling over the earth planet. He was the only king ruling over. He was the supreme sovereignty of the earth planet. And he was so famous because of his wonderful deeds, the way he took care of his citizens, his subjects, became even the talk of the heavenly planets. Not only in the earth planet, in the heavenly planet they were awestruck seeing Yudhishthir Maharaj's wonderful activities. O Brahmana, the opulence of the king was so enchanting that the denizens of heaven aspired for it. But because he was absorbed in the service of the Lord, nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service. Yudhishthir Maharaj's opulence was so enchanting that even the demigods in heaven became enchanted by his opulence. And they wanted to, they desired it. Shurepshita. Suras Parha, even the demigods desired it, that kind of opulence. But Yudhishthir Maharaj, the only thing that he was interested in serving Krishna. O son of Bhrigu, Shaunaka, when the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by Ashwatthama, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. He saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he was in the womb of his mother. So this way we can see that the child, even in the womb of the mother, is conscious. It is not that the child in the womb of the mother is just a lump of matter and doesn't have any consciousness. So we can do whatever we want to do with it. Keep it or kill it, as the people nowadays think. Oh, I don't like the child, get rid of it. But it's killing. It's actually worst kind of killing. Abortion is the worst form of killing. Why? Because otherwise a man can defend himself. When somebody comes to kill him, he can defend himself. But the child in the womb of the mother is defenseless. He can't do anything. And what to speak of when the mother herself kills the child? What an abominable act. What a heinous act. So, this is the advantage of going in deep into Vedic culture, reading the scriptures, we get a very clear understanding of what is what. From this we can get an understanding how the embryo grows in the womb of the mother. In the fourth canto, when Kapil Muni is instructing his mother, he very vividly gives the description of how the embryo develops in the womb of the mother. Very systematically, how the growth is, day by day practically, he describes that. From these descriptions we can understand how advanced the Vedic culture was. We think today's people are advanced, today's world is advanced. During the Vedic time, people are 1,000 times more advanced than today. Like for example, today people don't even know that the baby in the womb is conscious. People today don't even consider that the trees and plants have life. They have their feelings, they have their emotions, they have their feeling of pleasure and pain. What to speak of trees and plants, people today now don't even think that animals have the feelings of pleasure and pain. They don't consider that the animal, when it's being killed, it is feeling pain. Although they see that the body of the animal is writhing in pain after the head is severed from his body. The body jumps, body is in pain, it is writhing. But still they don't care. They don't mind eating the flesh of those animals. How insensitive people today have become. And that's the unfortunate state of affairs. That's why we should go deep into the Vedic understanding, study the scriptures very, very carefully. And we must remember that we have joined ISKCON, we have come to Krishna consciousness simply to study the scriptures. Actually, everything else is secondary. The most important thing is to study the scriptures and get the proper understanding about the spiritual life. We have other service, yes, but the service is also important, but the most important thing is to study the Vedic scriptures. Therefore, the best thing would be to carry the books with you all the time. Carry the books. Whenever you get the time, just open it up and read. But nowadays, what happens? Let's face facts. What happens? Only in the Bhagavatam class you read the books. Otherwise, We don't have the time. And the temple authority should be thankful to us that we are chanting 16 rounds. Temple authority should be thankful to us that we are rendering some service. No, the temple authorities are not like our supervisors. Navadip Chaitanya knows, when you set up, you want to get some work done, what do? You get somebody on top who watches whether you're going to do the work properly, whether you're doing the work properly. Or from my office, I see Gauravani is sitting down in the lawn, watching whether the workers are working properly. And Shanandan also. Shanandan, of course, doesn't sit. He stands there with an umbrella. And he is always watching. Now, yes, maybe the laborers and things have to be supervised in that way to get the work done. But in Krishna consciousness, that should not be the situation. We should do it voluntarily. Nobody needs to watch us. We should do it ourselves for our own benefit. For our own benefit. And the authority structure is there simply to help, not to supervise whether we are chanting our 16 rounds, whether we are getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to attend the Mangala Arati, the temple commander, waking everybody up. Sometimes in some temples, I remember, at 4 o'clock, the temple commander would go with a bell and he would ring the bell, waking everybody up. Okay, when we are new devotees, then it may be necessary, but not all the time. Yes, when we are new, it is necessary. I remember when I joined, the most difficult thing for me was to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to attend the Mangala Arati. And my roommate, one of my godbrothers, Tirthapada Prabhu, he was very nice. He used to really take care of me. Like when I would not wake up at 4 o'clock, then he would gradually will start to pull me out of the bed. And then I had to jump up, otherwise I would fall. And so, okay, at some point, initially it is necessary to get rid of a bad habit. We don't have that habit of getting up in the morning. So some practice is necessary. But that should be only for the time being, not all the time. We should take it upon ourselves to become inspired enough to do everything in Krishna consciousness voluntarily. And the temple authority structure shouldn't be like that, that they have to just sit there or stand there with a stick all the time out of fear everybody is doing something. No. Actually, as I mentioned, the temple authority is there to assist you in your devotional service, not to lord over you. To assist you. Okay, Prabhu, you have to render the service. Tell me what is necessary. Temple authorities don't have to ask, oh, are you chanting your rounds? It should be taken for granted. Does the temple authority ask? Do they have to ask, Prabhu, are you sleeping all right? Do they ask you? Maybe some kind-hearted person like Ganga Narayan asks, Prabhu, are you getting enough sleep? But generally, we don't, because it's taken for granted that we will make arrangements for ourselves to sleep well. So in this way, Krishna consciousness should become a voluntary affair. It shouldn't be a compulsion. No one should be forced. Like Prabhupada once mentioned that actually. Prabhupada told the devotees that don't force them to take initiation. Don't force them to take initiation. Don't force anyone to take initiation. He said, if you force them to take initiation, then they will leave. Because they themselves are not asking for it or interested about it. And Prabhupada said that they should beg for initiation. And you know what then Prabhupada said? Prabhupada stopped. And then Prabhupada said, no, they should come crying for initiation. They should not only beg for initiation, but they should come crying for initiation. So this actually applies in every aspect of our spiritual life. When you left home and joined ISKCON, did anyone force you? If somebody forces you to leave home and come to Krishna consciousness, then when you get the opportunity, you'll go back home. Isn't it? Because it was not voluntary, it was not spontaneous, it was not coming from within. But if you do it yourself, then yes, no matter whatever happens, you will stay on and continue. So Parikshit Maharaj, in the womb of his mother, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead coming towards him. The Lord was only thumb high. Hari Bol, his mobile phone. Switch off the mobile phone. Kar diya hai. Okay. He was only as big as the thumb. The Lord was this big. That's how Parikshit Maharaj saw the Lord when he was in his mother's womb. But he was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body. And he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus he was seen by the child. That is how Parikshit Maharaj saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord was enriched with four hands, earrings of molten gold, and eyes blood red with fury. As he loitered about, his club constantly encircled him like a shooting star. The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra. Just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew, he was observed by the child who thought about who he was. While thus being observed by the child, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, and the Protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions and who is unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. So in this way, counteracting the Brahmastra, the Lord disappeared. And how did he counteract the Brahmastra? A very beautiful example, analogy has been given. Just as the sun dries up a dewdrop, he counteracted the effect of Brahmastra. That is how powerful the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. So why should we not take shelter of him? If we take shelter of the Personality of Godhead, then will automatically become free from all fear and anxiety. What kind of fear can be there when we are protected by Him? Therefore, devotees are fearless. Devotees are bold. They are not afraid of anything. Because they know that the Lord is going to protect them. Thereupon, then, all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved. The heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. King Yudhishthir was very satisfied with the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, had the purificatory process of birth performed. Learned Brahmanas, headed by Dhauma and Kripa, recited auspicious hymns. Kripacharya and Dhauma. Dhauma Rishi is the family priest of the Pandavas or the Kuru dynasty. Dhauma. So Dhauma is a very exalted sage, and he was the family Kula Guru or family priest of the Pandavas or the Kuru dynasty. Just as Vasishta is the family priest of Ikshaku dynasty. In the family of Ramchandra, it is Vasishta who is their family priest. In the Kuru dynasty, it is Dhauma. Upon the birth of the son, the king, another personality is Kripacharya, Kripa. Kripa is very interesting to note here that how forgiving the people used to be those days. Kripacharya actually sided with the Kauravas, fought against the Pandavas, and he was a party when Ashwatthama killed the sleeping soldiers, including the five sons of Draupadi, in the tent. Kripacharya was the party, but still the Pandavas, at the time of Parikshit Maharaj's birth, they invited him and asked him to recite the verses. And not only that, actually, Yudhishthir Maharaj put Parikshit Maharaj in the custody of Kripacharya when he left. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan ki jai, Jai Shri Shri Gaunitai. So we can see that they were so forgiving and so tolerant. They did not remember what he did. And Kripacharya also was involved in killing Abhimanyu. When the seven Maharathis attacked Abhimanyu and killed him unarmed, Kripacharya was one of them. But the Pandavas did not bear any grudge against him. And as I was saying, like, not only did they call him at the time of Parikshit Maharaj's birth, but they put Kripacharya as the custodian of Parikshit Maharaj when Yudhishthir Maharaj left his kingdom. And this is how the great people used to be, and this is how exalted these personalities also were. Like, they just did not bear any grudge from their past deeds. Upon the birth of a son, the king, who knew how, where, and when charity should be given, gave gold, land, villages, elephants, horses, and good food grains to the Brahmanas. The learned Brahmanas, who were very satisfied with the charities of the king, addressed him as the chief amongst the Purus and informed him that his son was certainly in the line of descent from the Purus. It is the Puru dynasty. The Kauravas are actually coming from Puru. Who is Puru? Puru is the son of King Jajati. Jajati was cursed by Shukracharya that he'll become old. And the youngest son, and Jajati felt that he still had the desire to enjoy this world. Therefore, he felt that if he becomes old, his desires will remain unfulfilled. Therefore, he asked his sons to take his old age and give their youth so that he could continue to enjoy for us for some time until he got fried. And so he asked all his other sons, and none of them wanted to take his old age. But the youngest one, Puru, accepted it. Therefore, he became very pleased with Puru. And he made him his successor to the throne. And in that line comes the Pandavas, or the Kuru dynasty. The learned Brahmanas, who were very satisfied with the charities of the king, addressed him as the chief amongst the Purus and informed him that his son was certainly in the line of the descendant of the Purus. The Brahmana said, "This spotless son has been restored by the all-powerful and all-pervasive Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, in order to oblige you. He was saved when he was doomed to be destroyed by an irresistible supernatural weapon. For this reason, this child will be well known in the world as one who is protected by the personality of Godhead." Therefore, what was the name of Parikshit Maharaj? Vishnurata, the one who has been protected by Vishnu. "O most fortunate one, there is no doubt that this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities." The good King Yudhishthir inquired, "O great souls, will he become as saintly a king, as pious in his very name, and as famous and glorified in his achievements as others who appeared in this great royal family?" So Yudhishthir Maharaj inquired whether he will be as glorious, as famous, as noble, as pious, and as chivalrous as the other members of this glorious dynasty. And then the Brahmanas replied, "The learned Brahmana said, O son of Pritha, this child shall be exactly like King Ikshaku, the son of Manu, in maintaining all those who are born, and as for following the Brahminical principle, especially in being true to his promise, he shall be exactly like Rama, the personality of Godhead, the son of Maharaj Dasharath." So the Brahmanas then started to describe the qualities of Parikshit Maharaj. He will be as in maintaining his Sith subjects, Prajas, he will be like Ikshaku. Now you remember Ikshaku, who is Ikshaku? "Imang vivashate jogang praktavan aham abhayam vivashwan manave praho manor ikshakuve avravit." So who is this Ikshaku? Ikshaku is Manu's son, Vaivashyata Manu's son. And in that family appeared Lord Ramchandra, in the Ikshaku dynasty. And King Ikshaku was famous for his protecting his citizens or taking care of his citizens. In maintaining all those who are born. All those who are born means those who are who are his citizens, praja. Praja, the word praja means one who is born. Prakrishta rupena jayate. Jayate means to born. So the king's business is to take care of his citizens like a father. Just the way the father takes care of his children, a king is supposed to maintain his citizens. So in maintaining his citizens, his prajas, he should be like Ikshaku. And as following the Brahminical principles, and especially to be true to his promise, he'll be like Lord Ramchandra. While Lord Ramchandra is famous for his word of honor, because his father took a vow, promised to his wife, Kaikeyi, that he would, whatever she would want, he would fulfill that promise. And in order to fulfill the word of his father, actually Dasharatha was not inclined to grant these desires of Kaikeyi, that Bharat becomes the king and Ram goes to exile in the forest for 14 years. Dasharatha didn't want to grant that boon. But Ramchandra, in order to fulfill the words of his father, he voluntarily retired, he voluntarily relinquished his claim on the throne and he went to the forest. Therefore, he's saying that in fulfilling his promise, he'll be like Lord Ramchandra. The child will be munificent donor of charity and protector of the surrendered soul, like the famous king Shibi of the Ushinar country, and he will expand the name and fame of his family like Bharat, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta. So, Maharaj Shibi, he was famous for his protection. Anyone who came and asked for protection to Shibi, Shibi would go out of his way to give him the protection. And there is a very wonderful incident that actually exemplifies Shibi's nature. That once, in order to Shibi's fame as a maintainer, as a protector, and giver of charity and protector of his surrendered souls, it reached the heavenly planet. So Indra decided to test him. So Indra told Agni that this person has become very famous for his charity. So let us go and check him out. Let's see how true is the words that's spreading about him. So Indra assumed the form of an eagle, and Agni, the fire god, took the form of a pigeon. And the eagle was chasing the pigeon to kill him, right? Because the eagles are carnivorous birds. So chasing the pigeon, and the pigeon went and took shelter of King Shibi and said, "Please protect me." Then Shibi protected, and then the eagle came and spoke to him. Sometimes it's also not unusual that a bird would speak like a human being. So the eagle said, "Look, this is my food. So give me the food." By nature's arrangement, other birds are my food. So I'm hungry and I want to eat this bird. So why are you coming in between and preventing this arrangement of nature? Then Shibi said, "Look, this bird has taken shelter of me. So it is my duty to give him protection." Then he said, "But I am hungry and this is the bird that I am chasing." Shibi said, "There are plenty of other birds going. So, anyway, and that's not what Shivi said. Rather, Shivi said that this bird has taken shelter of me. So, okay, I will give you some other flesh. So, you eat that flesh. So, the eagle would not listen. He said, no, I want this bird. Then finally, he agreed that if Shivi gives the equal amount of flesh from his body, then he will accept it. Shivi immediately agreed. And then he cut, then he put the, and he said, make sure that it is equal amount. Shivi said, don't worry, I'll measure the, I weigh the amount. So he cut some flesh from his body and he put the pigeon in a balance. And on the other side of the balance, he cut the flesh and put it. The pigeon was heavier. So he cut more flesh, put it, still pigeon was heavier. And he kept, and finally, he decided to stand on the other side of the balance himself. Not just the cutting the flesh from his body, but he sat on the thing. And at that time, Indra assumed his form. And he admitted, Indra and Agni assumed their original form as Indra and Agni and told him that they came to test him. And they are completely satisfied. And they fully agree that the fame that spread all over the three worlds about his charity and quality of giving protection is indeed true. Now, the Brahmanas were saying that Parikshit Maharaj will be as charitable and as a noble a protector as King Shivi. Then, and he will expand the name and fame of his family, like Bharat, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta. Dushyanta was a king who got married to Shakuntala. Shakuntala was the daughter of Vishwamitra and Menaka, who was raised by Kanva Muni. And Dushyanta, while hunting in the forest, became thirsty and hungry, and he came to the ashram of Kanva Muni in the middle of the forest. And there he saw Shakuntala. She was such a beautiful young girl that he immediately fell in love with her. And at that time Kanva Muni was not there, so when he proposed to Shakuntala, Shakuntala said that without my father being present, I cannot really leave with you or accept you. So then it was understood, it was decided that when Kanva Muni comes back, then Shakuntala, with his permission, would go to the kingdom of Dushyanta. But in the meantime, Shakuntala got cursed by Durvasa Muni. And as a result of that curse, Dushyanta completely forgot about Shakuntala. And after Kanva Muni came and Shakuntala was sent to Dushyanta's kingdom, Dushyanta completely forgot. And before leaving, Dushyanta gave her a ring with the royal insignia. And so Shakuntala told him that, well, you gave me your ring, and then Dushyanta wanted to see the ring. And actually, this ring was Dushyanta's ring, so it was large in Shakuntala's finger. And when she was taking bath in the river, the ring slipped out of her hand. So, so as a result of that, Shakuntala was humiliated, and then Shakuntala left the palace. Two brahmacharis of Kandamani's ashram escorted Shakuntala, so took her back. And Shakuntala, in course of time, gave birth to this son from Dushyanta, and he was King Bharat. And Bharat was brought up in the forest, in the ashram of the sages, but he was extremely powerful. He used to fight with, barehanded, he used to fight with the lions. He could defeat anybody, any animal. Therefore, he got the name Sarvadaman. He could defeat anybody. He could defeat everybody. And of course, later on, Dushyanta remembered about Shakuntala, and he came and took the son back with the mother. And that's how Bharat became the king. And Bharat is actually the forefather of the Pandavas. In the same line, Pandavas came. Therefore, Arjun in Bhagavad Gita often has been addressed as Bharata, King Akurvata. Bharata. So here the Dushyanta's glory, Maharaj, he'll become, he'll spread the fame like of the family like Bharat Maharaj. Amongst great bowmen, the child will be as good as Arjun. He'll be as irresistible as fire and as unsurpassable as the ocean. This child will be as strong as a lion and as worthy a shelter as the Himalayan mountains. He'll be forbearing like the earth and as tolerant as his parents. This child will be like his grandfather Yudhishthir or Bhim in equanimity of mind. He'll be munificent like the lord of the Kailash hill, Shiva. And he'll be the resort of everyone like the supreme personality of Godhead Narayan, who is even the shelter of the goddess of fortune. The child will be almost as good as Lord Sri Krishna by following in his footsteps. In magnanimity, he will become as great as King Rantidev, and in religion, he will be like Maharaj Jajati. So Rantidev also is one of the forefathers of the Pandavas, who was famous for his treating the guests. He was very charitable, very generous. And King Jajati, I just mentioned a little while ago, King Jajati was cursed by Shukracharya. He got married to Shukracharya's daughter, Devjani. And Devjani
got into a disagreement with her friend, Sharmishtha, who was the daughter of the king of the demons, Vrishaparva. Vrishaparva was the king of the demons, and his son, his daughter, Sharmishtha, and the guru of the demons is Shukracharya. So Vrishaparva's guru was Shukracharya, and Shukracharya's daughter, Devjani, and Sharmishtha were friends. And one day they got into a fight over a simple thing, like Devjani could not recognize the dress. They took bath They all went to take bath, and after they came out of taking bath, the dress got changed. Devjani put on Sharmista's dress. And in this way, the dress got changed, and they got into a fight. And as a result of that, Sharmishtha just put her in a well, threw her in a well and left. And at that time, Yajati was hunting in the forest. And he heard the cry of a woman, and he found that Devjani was in the dry well. So he pulled her out of the well. And Devjani fell in love with Yajati and wanted to marry him. So Yajati agreed, and Devjani took the revenge, became so upset with and told her father about what happened. And then Shukracharya became very angry with King Vrishabharga. And that anger could be subsided only by Yajati, by Sharmishtha becoming a maidservant of Devjani. And Devjani got married to Yajati, and Sharmishtha came with Devjani as a maidservant. Although she was the princess, she became the maidservant of Devjani. And Shukracharya could understand that it could be troublesome that such a beautiful woman would be around him, around the king, and so king might become attracted to her. So he made a condition that, look, do not have any relationship with Sharmishtha. But in course of time, Yajati did develop a relationship with Sharmishtha. And in her womb, he gave birth to 4 children. And then when Devjani found out, she left and went back to her father and reported what happened. And then Shukracharya cursed Yajati that he'll become old. Your body will become invalid and old. And so then Yajati actually exchanged his invalidity and old age with his youngest son Puru. And then after some time he gave his youth back and took back his old age. So this is the history. These are not just some fairy tales. How could he make out that this is historical? First consideration is, in the Vedas there is no room for a lie, no room for untruth. And another proof is that these presentations are so systematic. It's chronologically, it is systematically, it has been drawn. Like we see that it's not, like often again, we can consider this way, that okay, there are some fictional characters. Like people write stories about people. Like say for example, a Superman. There is a person called Superman. Now, who is Superman's father? We may get to know, yes, Superman's father is there. But Superman's grandfather and his great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, no trace. There is no such record. Only in reality, such defined chronological order can be maintained. The child will be like Boli Maharaj in patience, a staunch devotee of Lord Krishna like Prahlad Maharaj, a performer of many ashwamedh sacrifices, and a follower of the old and experienced men. This child will be the father of kings who will be like sages. For world peace and for the sake of religion, he will be the chastiser of the upstarts and the quarrelsome. After hearing about his death, which will be caused by the bite of a snake bird sent by a son of a Brahmana, he will get himself freed from all material attachment and surrender unto the personality of Godhead, taking shelter of him. After inquiring about proper self-knowledge from the son of Vasudev, who will be a great philosopher, he will renounce all material attachment and achieve a life of fearlessness. Thus, those who are expert in astrological knowledge and in performance of the birth ceremony instructed by King Yudhishthir about the future history of this child, then being sumptuously remunerated, they all return to their respective homes. So his son would become famous in the world as Parikshit, examiner, because he would come to examine all human beings in his search after that personality whom he saw before his birth. Thus, he would come to constantly contemplate him. As the moon in its waxing fortnight develops day after day, so the royal prince Parikshit very soon developed luxuriantly under the care and full facilities of his guardian grandfathers. Just at this time, King Yudhishthir was considering performing a horse sacrifice to get freed from sins incurred from fighting with kinsmen. But he became anxious to get some wealth, for there were no surplus funds outside of fines and tax collection. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north left by King Marutta. By those riches, the king could procure the ingredients for 3 horse sacrifices. Thus, the pious King Yudhishthir, who was very fearful after the battle of Kurukshetra, pleased Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, being invited to the sacrifices by Maharaj Yudhishthir, saw to it that they were performed by qualified twice-born Brahmanas. After that, for the pleasure of the relatives, the Lord remained a few months. O Shaunaka, thereafter the Lord, having bade farewell to King Yudhishthir, Draupadi and other relatives, started for the city of Dwarka, accompanied by Arjun and other members of the Jadu dynasty. So, thus end the 12th chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Birth of Emperor Parikshit. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question?
What is Mahatattva and where does this situate?
Where is it situated? Mahatattva is the basic ingredients for material creation. So, Mahatattva is with Prakriti. The ingredient remains with the Prakriti. And then, when the Lord glances or the material nature becomes agitated, then the Mahatattva becomes gradually transformed by the influence of the modes. And as a result of that, the material nature becomes manifest. So, all the ingredients are there. All the ingredients of the material creation are actually coming out of Mahatattva. That 8 elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. Even mind, intelligence and false ego is generated from Mahatattva. Where does it stay? It stays with Prakriti. Yes. One reason of his envy was his intense attachment to Duryodhana. He was very attached to Duryodhana. And when Duryodhana was mistreated like that, when Duryodhana was, especially when Duryodhana was killed in a wrongful way, actually according to the law of battle, one cannot kill. I mean, one should not hit below the belt. Now, Bhim actually killed Duryodhana by breaking his thigh. And so Ashwatthama was upset, and especially when he saw Duryodhana lying there all by himself with broken thigh. Like a king who is to be attended by thousands of people all the time. Now when he saw him in that miserable condition, he was totally heartbroken. And then he was lying under a tree that night and he saw an owl came and attacked the nest of a crow and killed the sleeping offsprings of the crow, the baby crows. So from that he got the idea. And he went to the Pandava camp and he started to kill the sleeping soldiers who, after celebrating the victory that night, were fast asleep, including the 5 sons of Draupadi and Draupadi's brother, Drishtadyumna, who actually killed his father. So, you see, like, his consideration was that, you know, his father was killed in a wrongful way. Duryodhana has been killed in a wrongful way. Like, you know, so as a result of that, he became very revengeful. And then finally, he wanted to destroy he actually released Brahmastra to Arjuna when he was completely afraid of losing his life. And then he wanted to destroy the last member in the womb of Uttara, of the Kuru dynasty, Pandava. So that is, and as a result of his envy, he has become like a madman. And he is wandering around, a madman, completely total deranged state of mind because of his envy. Yeah, why? Because I mean, if he recognized that it is the will of Krishna, then obviously he won't be like a madman. The insanity is due to forgetfulness of Krishna. But on the other hand, one hand is forgetfulness of Krishna, and on the other hand is excessive attachment to relationship. Relationship to his father, relationship to Duryodhana and his other friends who were killed in the battle. Yes.
And why is Kripacharya's position so accelerated, even though the Pandavas to prevent him from Duryodhana and others, but did not have the same kind of feeling towards Kripacharya, even though he was on the opposite.
Hmm. You see, because Kripacharya was a Brahmana and he was their superior, they were respectful. Like another example is, like, all the Dhritarashtra put them into so much tribulation, right? But still, they were actually taking care of Dhritarashtra. So this is the Vedic culture. Like, you know, duty comes first. The respect towards the superior supersedes any other emotional consideration. Yes, Bhima.
Super soul resides in the heart. So does the good thing like our food and emotions. I was wondering how can, if the super soul was there, all the dirty can also exist in the heart. And if the super soul is covered by these things, how is it covered? Is that contradicting the
Super soul never gets covered as such. But living entity's consciousness becomes covered. And it is as such, the heart where the super soul is residing, he allows it to become dirty because he is not aware of the super soul's presence or aware of super soul's identity. When he does, then he begins to clean up his heart. When he recognizes who is the super soul, the Lord is present as the super soul, who the Lord is. He recognizes that and feels his presence in the heart as a super soul. Then he develops proper respect towards the super soul, and as a result of that he starts to clean his heart.
Just a couple more observations.
Yeah.
After releasing the Brahmas the first time by Shrutama, which is not correct origin, then Shrutama was bound up and this jewel taken out and hair cut. So in the shloka it says he lost all his energy. But then he was able to release another Brahmasa afterwards. Does it mean that apparently means he didn't lose all his energy, still had energy?
Yeah, the thing is that he lost his energy, but the weapon's energy was still there and he had the know-how to release the weapon. Like you see, the worst coward and the weakest person can pick up a gun and start shooting, right? So it's something like that. If he was not actually acting with his own strength, and because he lost his strength, he actually became deranged. And that's where he could actually indulge again in such a heinous act, totally forgetting the generosity and kindness that the Pandavas had displayed towards him. Yes, pardon? Janamejaya. His son, Janamejaya, became the king. Yes. You see, here again is a consideration of duty. They considered, including Bhishma Dev, that we are being maintained by Duryodhana. He is the king, and our duty is to line up with the king. Right? So there was no sentimental consideration. Oh, I love Pandavas so much. That consideration didn't have any place there. Because we are subjects of a king, then we have to side with the king. Right? And that's why, you know, they sided with Duryodhana and fought for him.
But they are not enemies of...
And when you are fighting the battle, then you are fighting the battle. Then there is no room for thinking, this or that. It is, we are fighting a battle. We have to kill or get killed. When you get into a battle, that is the situation. Either you will get killed or you will kill. Kill or get killed. Who was Kripacharya? Kripacharya is the son of a great sage called Sarabhan. Sarabhan had one son and one daughter, Kripa and Kripi. Kripi was married to Dronacharya, and she was the mother of Ashwatthama. Okay, yes, sir. Anushya, take the mic.
The Pandavas had accepted him and forgave and tolerated him. They not only did that, but they made him the custodian of his sons. How does faith and trust come in? Because they not only forgave him, but they entrusted their son to him. How, in practical terms, in our daily lives, do we, when faith and trust is broken, you can forgive and tolerate, how do we put that in?
Yeah, they could have implicit faith on person like that, although the person had gone against him, because they knew that this person is not duplicitous. He is not playing double role. You know, whatever he does, he does it with complete conviction. When he sided with the Duryodhana, he fought with all conviction. Now that he is with the Pandavas, with them, he is with them all the way. Therefore, they could trust him.
He was so obsessed with the prostitute and covered up with his lust, but yet she simply made one statement and immediately he understood. What was the one thing present that enabled him to do that?
Very good, very good point. What causes that is conscience. It just hits you all of a sudden, and you come back to your senses. That's what actually happened. His conscience actually brought him to his senses, and he realized, oh my God, that's true. You know, what am I doing? Look at my condition, how degraded I have become. And then he left everything and decided to offer himself completely to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gopinande Hare Krishna.